Hey folks, we're back. It's agoodlifebabe.com. Jeff and Joel's Tales from New Orleans, episode 60. It is our 100th posting, and it's been 1 year for the It's a Good Life Babe podcast. Everybody,
welcome back. It's goodlifebabe.com. Jeff and Joel's Tales from New Orleans. Holy shit, we led with the lead. Not our guest, but the lead. We're so happy to have a returning guest, Ethan Ellistad, in the house from MacDown. What's up, Ethan?
How you guys doing? I'm happy to be your accidental special guest for your 100th.
It's a happy accident. You're one of our first guests. Look, folks, we just realized the other day, I was checking out to make sure we were on Google Play, which is now distributing our podcast along with Player.fm. Stitcher and iTunes, and we're all happy about all those things that those distributors have picked us up. And Google Play does a count of how many postings, how much publishing you've done. And I just noticed yesterday we were at 99. So this is the 100th publication, and it also happens to be exactly 1 year to the date that we started the podcast of this iteration with Aaron Lambert.
All right.
So that's all happy, fun shit.
Exactly. And so Ethan is joining us here. I know that we got some housekeeping to do, but that was it.
That was
right?
The housekeeping.
That's it? Nothing
that's
else?
That's all I got.
Okay, cool.
You got a new bike.
I got a new bike. I don't think we ever even touched on... Did we talk about the European trip?
We didn't talk about...
Did we talk about European vacation, Spencer?
We just talked about how... was late and jet lagged from it,
That
was about it.
We didn't get it. So maybe later in the episode, or maybe in part two,
we'll talk about that
a little bit. But Ethan is joining us today. For those of you who don't know, MACNO, as Joel mentioned, is the Music and Culture Coalition of New Orleans.
Correct.
And these guys are in the trenches, defending musicians and defending culture bearers and culture throughout the city of New Orleans in a variety of ways. I would say principally through zoning and through music noise ordinance type things, and in many other ways too, maybe police harassment and things of that nature. You could certainly describe it a lot better than me.
And you guys have a big vote coming up, right? Is that tomorrow?
Tomorrow. So by the time you hear this, it may have happened, but...
We'll get this posted tonight, but by the time you hear it.
Well, we can talk about that. But yeah, we do, you know, my sort of anti-elevator speech is we sort of do the least sexy things around music and culture, which is the zoning ordinance, the noise ordinance, all the behind-the-scenes things that have to happen to make the culture of New Orleans work. Sort of in a legal sense as well. But also,
you gotta keep the clubs open, right?
Exactly right. So, but you know, I always say like a musicians shouldn't have to know about zoning ordinances, right?
That's right.
I know about zoning ordinances. I'm also a terrible musician, so actually, there's a symbiotic relationship that works pretty well.
It's like Rick Farmer.
Yeah, yeah. You would have either been a music promoter or or doing what you do now, and we're grateful for that.
I'm a cultural ally, right?
That's right.
You're an
That's
advocate
right.
for culture.
Right. Exactly. And so a lot of it came from that space. Now we've been branching out a little bit more to work on other issues that really impact, you know, musicians' lives, culture bearers' lives, things like affordable housing, criminal justice reform, things that, you know, are large societal issues, but certainly impact the culture, where it can happen, who does it, and how benefits can come back. So we're sort of looking at how we can keep doing what we've always done, but also expand outwards. Particularly in this political climate, there's a lot of need for advocacy in all senses, I think.
That's right. So. Well, tell us a little bit about the master plan and how your initiatives fit into it, the New Orleans master plan that the city council and the mayor's office has been working on.
I'm sorry, can I just interrupt real quick and just say this, that I'm so thrilled about this vote that is happening tomorrow, because we're going to talk exactly about what you're asking, Joel. Because these are amendments to the master plan that MACNO crafted and proposed to the City Council of New Orleans that, frankly, have been a long time coming. Yeah. And when I glanced at them yesterday, I know that you and I had some conversations about it just here and there, but I didn't understand the general tenor of the... the implications behind what we were talking about. Mm-hmm. It is everything that I could have dreamt of in my kind of wheelhouse mm-hmm. of where my biggest passion is for the degradation of culture in New Orleans, as I see it, is in these incubator clubs mm-hmm. that exist within neighborhoods, you know, where places have been decimated. In particular, the unbelievable decimation of music clubs in the Treme, and also in the Rampart Corridor, when you talk about Donna's and some of these other music places.
Yep.
These venues, there's only, literally right now, in a town like New Orleans, these are the venues that, like, between high school and college and playing in bigger venues or playing just regular stuff where you have to work out your chops, work out your routines, get your music down, do new material for all kinds of people, not just musicians, comedians, actors, performers of all stripes go and do their, they do the basic work of honing their craft in these clubs, and there is no other space available. That is the way that we do it in this country.
No, as a comedian, I can attest, we need those places where we can suck at.
Yeah, right, exactly, exactly.
We're here for you, man.
And it's, and it's these places, to me, that have been, I mean, amongst other people, buskers and street performers and whatnot, that have really suffered the brunt of a lot of aggressive zoning ordinance enforcement by moneyed interests who are more concerned about cultural preservation as it applies to architecture rather than actual culture.
Right.
And so, long and short of it is, you guys introduced the thing that would allow, and the vote goes down tomorrow, that would allow historic buildings that have been used in the past as music clubs to have that that designation be applied for again in perpetuity, as I understand it.
So yeah, and I guess a simpler way to do it is it allows historic music venues to reopen as music venues.
There you go, exactly. So,
and the example that it's easiest to use is a place like Donna's, which was a music venue. It was, because of zoning law, because it was closed for more than 6 months and it was a what's called a non-conforming use, so it didn't, its zoning, underlying zoning had changed, that so
because it was out of use for 6 months, it automatically kicked into a zone change,
right? And so it was no longer allowed to have music. And
Jesus,
that happened to all the clubs on Rampart, but Donna's is the best example. Basically what happened if this amendment passes in the master plan would create a pathway that it could then reopen. So it wouldn't just be, you can't just reopen it tomorrow. It was grandfathered in, but you lose it. So this would allow them to, you know, what it would do is, you know, it's not an immediate thing. It's not like tomorrow somebody could reopen Donna's, but it would, there's now a pathway that it could, whereas right now there's not. There's maybe no pathway, by tomorrow night there could be.
Right.
But they wouldn't be able to just say no, as they have been able to do, and as they did with the person who invested in Donna's and purchased it from the previous owners, and who wasn't able to meet the turn it around in 6 months deadline. Right. Anybody who is a business owner and has done any kind of like turnaround on a business can tell you that, you know, obtaining the financing, look, you may have the money for the lease or to buy the building or something like that, but it doesn't end there. Then you have to apply your vision some kind of way and deal with contractors and make renovations and get the place ready in order to open it.
And a lot of times licensing and permits, and a huge
amount of that is out of your control.
Sure.
And the idea that all of those facets of opening a business can sometimes happen within this like onerous framework of 6 months. And keep in mind, here's the thing, the 6 months starts ticking off from the moment last business shuts its doors.
Put a bow on it. One of the most venerable music clubs in town and on a sacred, important street in New Orleans music and history, there was someone who wanted to revive that business and simply could not because there was not a pathway.
Correct. Yeah. And he got it open, they shut him back down within a month or two, I think.
Within a month or two, because somebody, a very sophisticated and moneyed individual who understands zoning, was aware of that club opening and reopening, and didn't want it within his like assumed fiefdom. And Leo Watermeyer, I'll just say it straight up. I mean, that's who it was.
It's not a secret,
It's not a secret. It was this guy, Leo Watermeyer, and he's known. He has a reputation for...
We're tagging him.
I mean, he has a reputation for putting his hands in the pie of issues that have to do with that Rampart corridor where the new streetcar has just been built, right? I mean, it's fair to say that.
And I think, you know... clearly, there was, and I think post Katrina, a clear movement headed by Jackie Clarkson and French Quarter resident associations to stamp out music on Rampart, and that was clear because one by one by one, they didn't allow them to reopen, they got them shut down, and Donna's was the last.
What was the motivation there?
They didn't want music on Rampart Street because of the same.
Wanted everything in the quarter.
Yeah, the same people that sue all music venues soon now, the same groups. It just is.
Well, can I say something too? It also took place within a time frame. There was this window of open aggression and warfare, if I can term it that way, because I think that it was. In this kind of 8-year window after Hurricane Katrina, because the political landscape of New Orleans changed dramatically, mostly on a racial front.
I was going to say, is this about race? I mean, because you guys are so dialed into this issue.
It is.
We have listeners who are from all over, and I think people probably want to know, why do they want to stamp them out? Just straight up. Is it just straight up race? Is it coded race, like quote unquote crime?
I think
unsavoriness.
I think
also
it's
coded racism.
I think it's a lot of different.
It's a combination of factors.
A lot of it is just pure elitism, and some kind of idea of power and control, and that there has been a necessity that a suppressed minority of wealthy white people haven't had their say in 50 years or some imagined vicinity of time where they feel like they were held at gunpoint, and all of the rights of the most privileged class of people in the world, that their rights were stripped from them by the political situation of New Orleans prior to Katrina, and that Katrina somewhat, to use a cliche, washed that away for this brief little window of time in the 8 years after Katrina, and they got their claws in and they were able to do a tremendous amount of damage to cultural aspects of New Orleans in that time. And it all took place on this front. It all took place in the corridors of City Hall, and in a way that people were just kind of throwing their hands up in the air and saying, like,
and with
why
developers coming in as well.
Why are all the clubs closed in Treme?
I mean, have left in Treme? We have Candlelight,
and now in the interior, that's it. And then now Derek Tabb opened up the Treme Hideaway on Claiborne.
Yeah.
But that's right by Claiborne and Esplanade. But
sure.
In terms of Rampart Street,
Ernie Cato,
mother-in-law,
a little bit.
A little bit farther down on Claiborne. So they said Claiborne and St. Bernard, right?
Right.
But I think in terms of Rampart, you know, when we were talking about this a couple of years ago, there's a video that we found from, I want to say, maybe 2001, 2002, where they're talking about turning Rampart Street into an entertainment thing is the worst thing they could ever do. And they have this, there's literally a quote from that video. And they have this whole video of like flashing police lights and like how it's going to just tear up the neighborhood and Rampart. And
it's like a terrorist propaganda video.
And it also comes from the same people that were pushing the noise ordinance. It's from the same group of people that have been and that's been happening well before I was here. But, you know, from the 90s when they introduced ordinances to stamp out performance in Jackson Square up through the noise ordinance. And essentially the same progression of people doing this whenever there's an opportunity to do it, particularly in the French Quarter, is when they would find take another chance to push forward their agenda, which I would say is an anti-music, they would call it an anti-noise, anti-probably crime agenda. It's generally an
anti-musician.
Musician.
Anti-culture.
Right.
One thing
the rabble, right?
They hate having the label anti-musician put on them, because they also want to believe that they're cool.
Right. I love music, but...
It's like I love music, but I'm a dick.
Right.
Right. So, and then they don't like you calling them a dick.
I love music, but I like to go to Irving Mayfield's Playhouse.
I like
as opposed to
even that. I mean, that's got a whole different connotations now, I suppose. But
well, of course.
Right.
Yeah, but
bad
then,
example.
But I like point, music. Like, I like music until I don't want to hear it, and then it should stop immediately, and I want to go to sleep. Right. That's sort of the idea. Is I want music when I want it, how it is, how I want it, only when I want it, as loud as I want it. Otherwise, it shouldn't be there.
Shouldn't exist. Yeah, yeah.
Of course, nobody knows what those conditions are, right? Because it's different for every person.
And
right.
every time you try to meet them, the goalpost moves.
Right.
So
right.
one of our amendments that we put in conjunction with allowing historic music venues to reopen is establishing a grant program that allows soundproofing for small bars and music venues, because that's always an issue people comes up. And so that's fine. We subsidize facade grants for business corridors. Why don't we just subsidize soundproofing for some of these spots that otherwise sure. couldn't afford it?
And
there's a no-brainer. But again,
it's a like, no-brainer, right?
Yeah, exactly. But again, people are like, well, that would help, but it still might be too loud, so we can't allow it, right? So no matter what you do, they're never gonna be like, that sounds good, right? That
right,
you can do
right.
that. It's like, oh,
they're just
but this.
Against they're against right. you. I mean, right. the root thing that they don't want to ever say in public, because it will expose the dictum, you know, in its bare naked form, is that they're just against the idea.
They just don't want they're you just in their against neighborhood.
No, they're against music clubs.
I mean, I would say there's
general.
No other at this point.
I mean,
there's
that's
no other.
It.
We put an amendment that is specifically about music clubs, and they're against it, right? I mean,
yeah,
there's
there
not
go.
Much else you
they're
can say.
They're just against it,
right?
Yeah. So tell us about this vote that's happening for the city council.
So this is a vote.
The master plan.
This is a vote on. I think this is the first time they've amended the New Orleans master plan, which was passed in, 2010?
Right.
It's the first time New Orleans had a master plan for its, a blueprint for the development of the city for the next 20, 30 years.
Sure.
The original master plan, when it was created, barely talks about culture. So there's, I think, 2 pages in a 600-page document about culture, and it's almost entirely in an economic development lens.
Sure.
And so
it's like, let's bust out the Mardi Gras Indians for
when
Microsoft comes to town for their corporate gig.
As if the culture bearers of New Orleans aren't the engine that is behind the economic development. You know, I mean, in tourism. I mean, I've said this a million times. I'll say it again right now. Is that there is a hierarchy, I believe. You know, and I mean, I'm sorry to the food people, but like, number one is music in this town, right? That's the number one driving motivator for people to come to New Orleans. It's the music culture, right?
Absolutely.
The second one, which is a close second, and you know, apologies to anybody in the food thing that thinks that like it's number one. It's not. It's food is number two, right?
Because you can get really good food in 20 different cities,
right?
Not New Orleans food, but I mean, there are only maybe 4 or 5 cities that are known for their music the way we are.
Right,
right. And then way, 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 way down and falls off a cliff, and then way down in third place somewhere, right? That's tied with some other things as well, like swamp tours, you know, or right. maybe like, I don't know, like the...
Oh, no, it's like cemetery tours.
No, it's...
I mean, you get all those little things
tied,
that are tied.
It's tied with...
French Quarter walking tours.
It's tied with cemetery tours. It's
voodoo
tied
shit.
With, it's tied with swamp tours, and it's tied with coupons that you get on the I-10 during the summertime, right? Which is the architecture of New Orleans, right? Buildings. Quaint homes that were built by former slave-owning... people
and that's
in the past.
That's tied
but
with that's tied
very
with
nice Spanish style,
which are very exactly right, and they are beautiful homes, you know.
Right.
I mean, and there are people that come, but the idea that the principal motivating factor, which a lot of these people are amazingly deluded
right. oh,
into
no,
into believing truly that they think that they think number three, which is way down there, is in fact number one.
Right, and I've been in meetings, council meetings, where they say, you know, you can get great music and great food everywhere, but you have to come to New Orleans to see the buildings, and that's why people are here, right? And
wow. Unbelievable.
And you know, people
you
do.
Can't believe it.
People do come for that, but also they come by, get a hand grenade, and walk by around the French Quarter and look at it, right? Like
factor two.
There are people that do historic home tours and take this regard on St. Charles, but again,
I'm sorry. Booze and bars is number three. right
that
behind
should be
food.
A little bit above
right behind food.
Being able to walk around with your drink.
I'm sorry, they're
number four.
Three. They're number four.
Being able to walk around with your drink.
They may get demoted again.
I didn't think this out very
well.
Yeah.
That's an organic podcast.
We forgot about the alcohol.
Right. Exactly.
But yeah, man, it's, you know, I've heard the argument that, you know, people come here for the for the buildings and everything else is secondary, and clearly that's just not. It's like people that argue that we're going to lose tourism because they took down four Confederate statues, right? Like, where was the Confederate tourism market that is like, you know what? They took down Lee. I mean, yes, there are racist people that are
going there.
They'll say that, but right, like, cancel the trip. Like,
yeah,
not
missing
any music. Right. We're not going to. They took our 5 minutes of looking at that statue is gone. We're out.
I am certain that at least like 2/3 of the Alabama fucking fan base will not come to the Sugar Bowl next time Alabama is playing in the dome. For
I
the
think
national
we're all
title.
Okay with that because right. last I'm time they came, that. They put their balls on everyone's face.
They sure did.
Right, and again, like if your goal was to come here to see, you know, Confederate statues, maybe it's okay if you don't come, right? Like, it's probably okay if you're boycotting. It's okay. Please continue.
Sure,
right.
I mean, you're not throwing down a lot.
But you know, can I just say the hilarious thing about that is that the Confederates like refuse to leave. I mean, it's this ironic thing. They're like boycott New Orleans, but hey, you know what? This is they're having a good time. I think.
Right.
Is what, you know, they're like, hey, camping out here, and like they got the good meth, you know,
right.
Or maybe like crack is better than meth or something like that. I don't know what kind. I mean, I just feel like they're scoring drugs, and they're like, New Orleans is great. I'm having a good time. You know,
I mean, I also feel
we can have our guns and our drugs. It's so much better than Chicago.
Right. I mean, I feel like they sort of, in some ways, like they got a sad little hobby, right? Which was to camp out in a neutral ground and you know, hang out with their little camp, you know, their little cookout.
Yeah,
whatever.
Little,
I mean,
right.
Like,
yeah, exactly.
If it wasn't so shitty and racist, like it would be kind of.
It looked
funny.
Like an Alabama tailgate.
Yeah, yeah, it would be.
It's <Where's> that.
That's right. Well, okay. So on a serious note, though, this in so many ways to me, it's such a fundamental change.
Right.
I never thought. That our city council would, if you rewind the playbook to like 5 years ago, that our city council would consider such a change. And to people who are listening, like it may sound like paper pushing, it may sound like nothing what we're talking about, right. But it is so fundamentally important to the preservation and culture in the city because these are the rules that cities in the United States of America are structured around. And the people who have an intimate knowledge of what those rules are have no compunction or no hesitancy whatsoever about getting into the mix and trying to fuck shit up for people that they don't like.
Right.
And that has been happening. And I want to commend you guys
for the
work that you guys have been doing. And I want to I don't want to get ahead of ourselves, but best of luck with the vote tomorrow because that is this is really a watershed moment in the fight for New Orleans culture after Hurricane Katrina.
Okay.
You know, we're 12 years out from the storm, and this is huge. This is huge for the future of the city.
Is this a vote for like city council members only, or is this open to the public?
It's city council members only. So, it is on the agenda for city council tomorrow. They've gone through. It's been I submitted the amendments a year ago, and so it's been a year process. And that was the second part of another process. So this is, you know, a 3 year sort of march to get to this point. I do want to acknowledge the fact that we didn't create these completely on our own. We work with some other cultural groups to do some of this stuff. So we work with.
You want to roll them off?
Yeah. So we work with the Mardi Gras Indian Hall of Fame. We work with Faces of Culture. We work with the Neo Jazz School of Music, and one or two others. Just we sort of sat down and, you know, there's the core of our amendments, which are the music venue, which is creating a comprehensive survey and protection plan for. Musically, historically, and spiritually important cultural places, and getting them protected. It's the music venue thing. It's the soundproofing grant program, and then the last part was written to say you need to unravel some of the red tape for cultural businesses in City Hall, but that's sort of been diluted to sort of a vague statement of support for cultural businesses. Like
we should
support cultural.
Right.
I mean, that's nice.
That's nice. So it. Gives people an excuse to roll the red tape back.
I mean, I guess that's the idea.
Yeah, but can I say something? Even that, even if it doesn't have teeth, at this point, right? Mm-hmm. Because amendments can always happen, right?
Right.
Even if it doesn't have teeth at this point, the idea that 5 years ago that anyone would have listened to that, that anyone in the city of New Orleans, it's insane when you think about this, on our city council, that they were petrified of the notion. This is how far advanced these anti-musician people got, that they made our city council so in fear of their jobs because of the money, the interests that they have.
This neighborhood associations primarily?
Well, also, I have to say that there was a very, very wealthy person in New Orleans who hates any music other than opera. And we don't know what happened to that guy.
Dog out of the week?
It's Stuart Smith. Stuart Smith.
You're the dog out of the week.
Right, exactly. Right, anyway, he funded lawsuits, basically. A slew of lawsuits.
I want to say probably 15.
Probably 15.
All of it pro bono.
All of it pro bono, right. And because he had the money and he could expend the resources. And the VCPORA and other organizations, FMIA, leaned on this guy for his support, and they were just beside themselves in this kind of like
treasure trove,
and this feeling of overwhelming power over a change that they thought they were going to make happen in New Orleans. And then enter Macno. Like, Macno's been around now for what, 4 or 5 years?
Almost five. Our almost fifth 5 anniversary years. Is coming up. Our quinquennial is coming
right,
up.
Right, exactly. Well, good.
Quinquennial.
And yes, Spencer, you got something?
Well, we do have something about Stuart Smith, who looks like in 2014 he was charged with cyberstalking.
That is correct.
That's right.
For the French Quarter.
That is correct. Yeah.
That was around the noise ordinance. So he was also...
this is how bitter the fight got.
Yeah, apparently he was threatening people
via text message, right. It was not well thought out either, right? They'll never figure that out. But
let me ask you this, like, in terms of...
Can you tell that story, background?
So he was... Sorry. When we protested the noise ordinance in, I guess, January of 2014, I guess it was.
It was a great protest, by the way.
And so,
it was City Hall. You had the musicians come down there.
Yeah, one of the most beautiful moments that I've seen.
They let a second line.
In my lifetime, in the history of New Orleans. Look it up, folks.
It was great, a great video. Yeah, it's still on our, go to our Facebook page, it's still the headline, right? Because there'll never be a better picture for us than that. But he was the one that essentially funded and got the people together to try to ram through a noise ordinance that would have essentially made it extremely easy to shut down music venues. And really quickly, just the way it did it is, in New Orleans, you take a sound measurement from where the person that complains is making the complaint. So if you're two blocks away from a music venue, say it's too loud, they come to your house and say, is it over the limit at your house? If it's not, then it's okay. What they wrote was an ordinance that would change the measurement to the property line of the business that was making the quote-unquote offense. So if you think of New Orleans, you think of like Powell's. How far is the front door from the street at Powell's? Maybe 5 feet?
Yeah.
So imagine if there's a band in Powell's, you're taking, instead of taking it two blocks away, you're taking it 5 feet from the door.
Right.
The way that's almost impossible for most venues to ever be in compliance.
That's right.
If they would have changed that, then they could have then had people call from anywhere in the city, because you don't measure from where the call is. So you could call from Gentilly for a club in the French Quarter.
Just because you got a vendetta or whatever.
And then they could take the measurements a year over and then shut down the venue soon. Right?
And can I add something? That they do that shit, right? Right, with the emails they go onto private emails and they email people, they have a coalition of the willing of people who anonymously complain. And that was the danger.
Right.
And they will fucking do that.
Right.
If they have a friend in the Gentilly Association and something's happening in FMIA and nobody wants to be exposed as the uncool person who did it, they'll contact that person and that person will make the complaint.
Sure.
That's almost where it got.
Yeah, and that's where we found that out, and that's when we protested. But he was the one behind it. He had his same group of people, one of whom is a PR person, Sharon Brilski, who still does PR for current candidates. But she also worked for Stacey Head, and so he got her essentially to take the ordinance that they wrote and have Stacey Head introduce it, short-circuiting the ongoing process that already existed and try to
That was around Christmas time.
Yeah, right? It was literally
Christmas time fugaboo.
Right, it was literally like the last council meeting before Christmas, and then it was going to happen. They were going to vote on it like in 3 weeks at the start of January, right?
Classic Louisiana Fugaboot, right? Yeah. Like they tried to introduce it in this 3-day window when nobody's looking.
Correct.
Right, and they caught it.
Yeah, and that's where we got to start. But that, I mean, that's where this was headed, and this is, we finally, after some years, were able to push back because, you know, there was no real organized pushback. Everyone sort of knew about it and knew it sucked and knew it was happening, but nobody had been able to push back enough because, you know, they were connected and musicians are, you know, hard to organize sometimes, sure. Right?
So you guys did the organization. Yeah.
Yeah. And also, like, that's why it helps to have people that are, you know, sort of like me who support things because this is what I do, right? So, like, I do this full time so I can sit there and watch council meetings and look at every agenda and every piece of legislation so they can't try to slip it by again.
Can I ask how you guys are funded? I'm curious in terms of who supports, like,
yeah, man. We'd love more funding, but grants, foundations, and private donations.
Yep.
So we're a 501c3. So www.macno.com/donate. You can feel free to take a look at that.
I would guess that most of your funding comes from grants and foundations.
Yeah. Like, I mean, that's I think it's pretty standard of all nonprofits.
Yeah, exactly. We have a good narrative, good mission.
We do, and we're slowly expanding, and we've been around long enough now that we've got a track record, and that's also key, right?
Yeah, 5 exactly.
Years of accomplishments, and pretty, you know, we've got somewhere to put together our press, and it's got to be like 150 pages of press now at this point, right?
Yeah. Because,
you know, it's newsworthy, right? Like, musicians storming City Hall gets picked up,
exactly,
which is to our benefit, and musicians in New Orleans have a bully pulpit if they can use it, right? Everybody wants a musician to talk about their issue and to come to city council and talk, you know, how many requests we get about, like, hey, I've got this thing. Could you get, you know, do you need musicians that want to come and, like, support our issue, right? And so if we can harness that for us, that's huge. So just real quick.
Yeah, musicians have the microphones, right? Not just at City Hall, but on stage.
Exactly. And also the council members, like, so, like, when Drew Brees came to open his Jimmy John's and showed up at City Council, it was like they weren't going to say no to Drew Brees and his Jimmy John's, right? They
That's
were
right.
Like,
yeah, right. Right.
Same, it's the same if you can get. And so I was happy.
Get Glendale, get John Boutte down there.
Right. We had
David Andrews.
Yeah, that's right. Right.
We had
Dr. John, God forbid.
Right. Yeah. That would be. Right. We had Deacon John speak our affirm amendments last time. That
Which
was
is so funny because he also was oddly enough featured on a webpage early on of some of the weird anti-musician thing.
Right. Well, they use some videos without people's consent or without them actually knowing what they were
really 100% all about.
Right.
Right. Yeah.
And they did that. But yeah, he showed up. Arsène Delay was there also and spoke. And so we had people with deep New Orleans roots. And you know, I mean, Deacon John is, you know, Deacon John, right? So having him to come up, and I didn't actually know he was coming. So for him to show up at the head of the union, and, you know, part of what we talked about was this amendment would actually, you know, allow Dew Drop In. There's been I think they finally changed the zoning to allow Dew Drop In to potentially reopen, but for a long time, that was a sticking point that Dew Drop In wasn't zoned to have music anymore. So even if reopened, you couldn't have music.
You see that?
Unbelievable.
I know. That is the thing.
The most venerable music club in New Orleans, arguably, can't have music anymore.
That's right. I'll just say it. I'm going to say it in the most raw way. We have great things in New Orleans, but we have the nastiest rich people in America. They're the worst. Okay? Well, I mean, they are. They're just like pucker-lipped, petty, unbelievably petty human beings, right? And so you have these incredibly...
And also, they're rich for New Orleans. They're not rich.
Yeah, they're rich for New Orleans. Yeah, they're not Connecticut rich. They're rich for... Like the funny thing about
it's a big difference.
Yeah, they're not California rich.
That's why they try and swing a big dick.
Yeah,
like people who are real rich, like Connecticut rich,
they can be cool.
They kind of don't give a fuck.
Yeah, yeah. Like there are people who are like 800 times.
Have you met people who are oil rich? They're so fun.
Oh yeah, it's just a barrel of laughs.
Especially from Dallas, everybody.
Let me tell you exactly right. So we have that in common.
You're from Dallas too.
I've been begging to ask this the last 10 minutes.
Please.
I've been itching.
Yeah.
And maybe you can't speak to this, but who on the current city council do you feel like is supportive of the kind of issues that MACNO is behind, and that you'd like to give a shout out to?
I mean,
and it can be the guy I'm running against.
I mean,
I'm running a positive campaign, even.
Oh, yeah, that's great. We need more of those. You know, I mean, I'm careful about politics for 2 reasons. One, we can't endorse candidates, and now we're in election season, so that's That's tough. I will say there are candidates that have been that definitely hear our message, right? And you know, there are some of them that will that could theoretically still be on the council. I think any everyone that's been supportive of us is either could have another term on the council or is looking for higher office. So
good.
I think there's if things go right,
so
there's a chance to
alignment
to
with
forward.
You guys is it can be a good thing.
Yeah, and it's, you know,
even if it's just a tangential sort of coincidence or whatever.
Right, but. And I would say, you know, I think it's fair to say that we have clashed the most with Stacey Head. And yeah. I think that's certainly no secret. Man, she had that ordinance. Like, we
exactly
protested her directly. Exactly. So,
well, and I mean, yeah, it makes sense in a way, right. Because, like, the wealthiest constituency
right.
is represented by her.
And certainly if Jackie
the wealthiest Clarkson, and the whitest.
If Jackie yeah. Clarkson had won, we would have essentially been in opposition for everything she would have said, probably, right? Like,
right, right.
And yeah. not just us, I think a lot of people would, but I think...
Yeah, she was horrific.
Right. I think it's easier to talk about people that are oppositional, because I think there's a lot of people also that... that dog, maybe dog take a middle road sometimes, they're sympathetic, but also, you know, work with neighborhood associations. So we struggle with people that make community agreement, community benefit agreements and good neighbor agreements sometimes because they skew neighborhood based a lot and they're actually more anti-business than good neighbor.
I got to tell you, the dude that I met with
sure.
last night.
And then they, yeah, go ahead.
Well, he's on the board of the neighborhood association where we live, Triangle. And guy's been hounding me a little bit. He says they want to get behind me. He hates the second lines. And he just came out and said it. And, you know, that cuts across every fiber of my being.
Right.
I told him as much.
Right.
And, I think what you just said, he doesn't want the business. I mean, he doesn't want people out in front of a club. Like, even the prime example, hanging out smoking a cigarette out front, he thinks that means crime and drugs.
Right.
And that's, you know, dude who's lived here in this neighborhood for several generations. And I don't know, man. I don't know what to do with that.
You know, I mean,
there is only one thing to do. Reject it.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I mean, at that point, yeah, it's sort of like trying to win over Trump voters, man. You're just not going to do it. Like,
I mean,
stop
yeah.
trying.
Yeah, 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 right. yeah. Just reject it, you know,
yeah.
and just be like, your vote is not going to be for me.
That's right.
You're going to be a dude who's probably going to stay home.
I'm running on something else.
And I think
if you don't like the candidate that's in there right now, and I'm not what you want, then
I'm the
you're
candidate,
just not going to vote.
I'm the candidate right. that would like four more prime examples, you know, the more music clubs.
Right. Right.
More incubators.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
And I think we, you know, and we try to be very reasonable, too. Like, we're not zealots of, like, every club has got to operate at all hours, whatever, you know.
Sure.
You know, the club should be good neighbors, right?
But, exactly.
But at the same time, trying to win over someone who's never going to be there is when we talked about earlier, is like, you keep saying, all right, we'll do this, and they say, great, but this. And so after a while, you just realize you just keep moving over more and more and losing more and more.
And they keep changing the goalposts.
Right, and it's like, well, could you shut down at midnight? Or how about we 10 a.m., 10 p.m. on weekdays? And how about... this, and how will we make sure that nobody's outside, and what about parking, and you're like, and can you do no go cups, and it's just like one by one by one
yeah.
by one by one.
Can you come clean every stoop in the
bar? Right. How about you don't have alcohol at all? How about you just like a soda shop, you know,
totally.
That has music, right? So
yeah, yeah.
Eventually, it just keeps getting pushed.
And you know, Joel, you're dealing with that in your work at the
sure.
CAC, and my advice to you, having been involved in my own business with these kinds of issues, is that that push and push and push and push is just there is no, it's an appetite that can't be fed.
Can I say
correct.
This though,
you know?
At least out of respect to a couple of my neighbors who I'm trying to do a better job of with being good neighbors, they contextualize the entire meeting and the sit down and the conversation with, I understand I moved into this neighborhood
mm-hmm.
and I understand what this neighborhood is.
Oh, that's way more than most people
right,
do.
Right.
And
right.
I understand that you guys are going to do the events that you do. I understand where we live, where I chose
right.
to live, but can you work with me a little bit?
Mm-hmm.
And so that, you know what that did to me?
That's that's a
yeah.
minor miracle.
That motivated me to work. And I realized that they've been kind of somewhat abused a little bit by being overlooked.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm changing things very quickly. Very, I mean, low-hanging fruit that's super easy to do as a neighbor.
Right.
Look, I can't stop Snoop Dogg from, on Friday night, I'm not going to cut down the bass at Snoop Dogg, which they want me to do.
Right. Sorry,
but
sorry,
I can stop dumping ice in their driveway.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
You know what I'm saying? I can make sure no one blocks our driveway that's right. a vendor of mine. I can do things that make their life better. Though I do got the one neighbor across the street, just to be clear, who's like the coded racist guy. Who's like...
Well, that's who I'm talking about, right?
Who's like, can't... He's like, yo, those lyrics with those F-bombs? I mean, he's so close to saying the N-word to me, man, on so many occasions.
It'll happen.
And he texted me tonight.
It'll happen eventually.
He texted me like 1 hour before we started recording this. And he's like, I thought we weren't having another big hip-hop thing. And I didn't think we had anything going on. You told us. And I was like, that's a cancer survivor fundraiser for women, empowering women. They're having a fashion show with women of a certain age. And they're playing like some disco for their runway show.
Right.
You know, but he hears bass and he thinks black people.
Right.
And he immediately gets enraged.
You should watch some of those old Alcoholic Beverage Control Board meetings. You know, it's barely code, right? There's one I watched.
It's barely code.
I saw these women, you know, shaking their backsides up and down to rhythmic music on outside of my thing, and I don't think that's acceptable for this neighborhood kind of stuff. It's like, I mean...
When I saw...
Right.
I know.
I don't know why those...
Fun is never acceptable for that neighbor.
There's so many instances of that, and anyway, all right, so maybe we should look at it. We're at about 41 minutes right now, and do we want to take a little break? Maybe?
Take a break, come back for part two?
Yeah.
That should be episode 101.
Yep.
That is 61.
No, yeah. not episode 101. It would be posting
101. 101st posting.
That's right.
Yeah.
Episode 61 coming straight. Back.
All right, we're going to talk a little bit more about this in a few minutes, folks. It's a good life, babe.com. Jeff and Joel's Tales from New Orleans. We'll be back.
Yeah, you're right.